This is a Christian Science extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. The title of this treatment is Mind Controls All Action, Prevent All Conflict. How is this possible? It is possible because the laws of the universe are the laws of God. God is defined as incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. Also, God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, and eternal. Principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all-substance, intelligence. Good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. Man is defined as the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. The Bible further tells us that God made man in his image and likeness, and also that everything that God made was very good, and that includes that God gave man dominion over everything. Mind is defined as the only I, or us, the only spirit, soul, divine principle, substance, life, truth, love, the one God, not that which is in man, but the divine principle or God of whom man is the full and perfect expression, deity, which outlines but is not outlined. The definition of substance. Substance is that which is eternal and incapable of discord and decay. Truth, life, and love are substance. As the scriptures use this word in Hebrews, the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Spirit, the synonym of mind, soul, or God, is the only real substance. The spiritual universe, including individual man, is a compound idea reflecting the divine substance of spirit. Definition of wisdom. Wisdom reveals opportunity to replace time-based theories such as age with real wisdom from God, mind. The wisdom of man is not sufficient to warn him in advising God. God is not separate from the wisdom he bestows. If one considers these various definitions which have just been recited, there is no dot that connects any of these definitions to chaos or imbalance or discord of any kind whatsoever. Principle is defined as being balance and harmony, structure, and system. Either God is principle, and principle is that definition, or there is no God, for God could not be a God of chaos, destruction, imbalance, anything that is less than perfect. Only something perfect is permanent. What kind of a God would be temporary? Certainly not a God that you or I would want to have as our God. Since God is omnipresent, there can be no other God. Only one God. The definitions that included omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction means that God is one, only, and all. Because that's the definition of omni. So there is no other. There is no other power. There is no other science. There is no other presence. And there is no other action. Therefore, an action which could be a confrontation between two events, or an individual and an event, or two individuals, is impossible as reality. Therefore, it is only a theory, a misunderstanding. It is a viewpoint that is incorrect. In a Christian Science prayer treatment, where does one begin? One begins within their own consciousness. Jesus saw all kinds of potential suggestions of something that was not good. He saw individuals that appeared to be blind, were a leper, even dead. But what did he have in his consciousness? He had in his consciousness that man is perfect, that the universe is perfect. And because he could see perfection and not imperfection, and that was the only thing embedded in his thought, was perfection, then the appearance actually changed from being discordant to being harmonious, from being imperfect to being perfect, from being dead to being alive, instead of being sinful to be pure, instead of being sick to be well. How did Jesus accomplish this? When asked what is the most important commandment of all, he replied, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Ye shall love your neighbor as yourself." In other words, if we do not love the visible, which is the image and likeness of God manifested as a physical looking appearance, we cannot love the underlying invisible source, which is God. If you love an image, you have to love the source. You cannot love the source without loving anything that is an image of the source. The Bible indicates that it's not possible to love God, which is invisible, unless we love God's manifestation. And of course, the head of the manifestation, the very top element, is man. Now, man is a generic name. It really means everybody. Male, female, adult, child, everyone. Now, that doesn't mean evil, because evil is not a part of anything that God created. There's nothing in the Bible that is a valid statement that indicates that God created evil. In the Old Testament, Habakkuk is quoted as stating that God is of purer eyes than to behold evil. spirit is substance. Spirit is flawless. That means if we want to see the flawless, true nature of anyone or anything, we have to be looking through a lens of spirit, not matter, not anything that is imperfect. One of Mary Baker Eddy's students indicated that she was working on a problem of vision and was not getting the result that was needed. Mary Baker Eddy sent back a response and said, "Are you able to focus no matter what comes your way?" Mary Baker Eddy devoted time every hour during her waking hours, which was probably, I would guess, 18 to 20 hours a day. So that means 18 to 20 times she was checking her own consciousness to make sure that she was only thinking pure thoughts about everyone and everything. Jesus gave us 41 parables. Not in a single parable does he attach any mistake to a personal name. He purposely pointed out in his examples that we must only think of any problem as something outside of an individual, not attached to an individual, not to identify it with an individual. You can think of the worst terrorists in the world, but you should be thinking of terror as a false representation of an activity, and an individual could not have anything unlike God attached to the real image and likeness. So the only thing we can do is to let that be a reminder, just like the good and the bad gardener story. There were two gardeners, each one managing an estate, and they were adjacent properties. And the one gardener was very well educated, very well experienced, and he maintained a garden of perfection. And the other gardener had a problem. He could not have a perfect garden on his own. So when he needed a plant to replace one of his that didn't make it, he would go to the other neighbor when he wasn't around and steal a plant. One day, one of the good gardener's friends came by to see his garden. And he said, "Wow, this is a beautiful garden, except what is this one hole here? Are you in the process of planting something else or what?" And he said, "No." He said, "My best friend needed that plant, and so it's in his garden." He said, "Why do you call him your best friend?" "Because he reminds me that I must be on guard of my thought and only think good about everyone, no matter what it seems that they did." So he flipped it. He turned a lemon into a lemonade. Something that could be considered stealing, he turned into a reminder to keep your thought pure. That's exactly what Jesus did. He needed to keep his mind pure all the time. So no matter what ailment or problem that he saw, he made sure that his thinking was seeing only the perfection of God. And that's the only reality that he saw and he realized could be. That's love. That's love. That's giving the benefit of the doubt to anyone and thinking of them only in their true nature. He was the epitome of love. when a soldier came to arrest him for the crucifixion, the trial and the crucifixion, Peter cut the ear off of the soldier, of one of them. Jesus said, "Put up thy sword, Peter." And Jesus healed the ear instantaneously. You would think that soldier would have been at his crucifixion. But no, out of the tens of thousands that Jesus taught, only a half a dozen people came to his crucifixion, and it didn't talk about anyone in the Bible coming to his trial. That would have shown support. He taught two groups of people, one 4,000 plus women and children, and another 5,000 plus women and children. And not only did he spend the time teaching them, but he fed them all. Fed them all out of real substance. The disciples said, "We only have two little fishes and five loaves of bread. How are we going to feed these people? They're all hungry. They've been here for hours and hours." Jesus realized that supply is not limited to what one sees visibly, but what one thinks in their consciousness about what real supply is. And that's not something that is visible. It is something that does never run out. It is an infinite supply, an infinite source. And of course, that source is spirit, not matter. Matter can be damaged, stolen, can expire. It can be so limited that it doesn't even begin to fulfill the need. But correct your thought about what real substance is, and you'll have a different result. Instead of having a lack, you will have an abundance, and always have what you need. Wentworth Winslow was one of the three Christian Science practitioners that had 15-minute appointments. And at the end of 15 minutes, the individual was healed. And he was involved in Christian Science practice for 35 years. Joel Goldsmith had 15-minute appointments. Same thing. 15 minutes, it was all over and done with, and the healing was complete. An individual called Joel Goldsmith to the BA, which is Benevolent Association, which is a Christian Science nursing home in the Boston area. And they had a problem, and they wanted him to come and heal. When he arrived, the receptionist said, "Why are you here?" And he told her. And she said, "You can't go in there." He said, "Why not?" He said, "Because everyone in the whole building is ill with a contagious disease. You go in there and you're going to catch it." He said, "How many people do you have here?" She told him it was several hundred. He said, "You only have one problem." He went over and sat down in the reception area for a few minutes. Pretty soon, the nurses started coming out, and they were in total amazement. They said, "What happened? Everyone was healed at the same time, and there's not a morsel of evidence that they were ever ill." Frederick L. Rawson is the third one that had 15-minute appointments. Frederick L. Rawson went even a very substantial step further, and he determined how to heal back in time. Imagine what that could mean. He doesn't state it, but I would guess, I would reason, that probably there was no recollection by the individual that they were ever experiencing the problem. whatever pain or aggravation or discord they went through of any kind whatsoever disappeared totally from memory, because he was able to make the treatment effective immediately after they realized they had a problem. That's better than instantaneous healing. That's instantaneous healing back in time. He was involved in over 500 healings of that nature. To give you an example of an instantaneous healing, he was visiting here in the U.S. He's from the U.K. And he was talking with another Christian Scientist. And this was back 110 years ago, early 1900s, and they were gazing out the window, and that was at the early days of motorized transportation, so almost everyone was still using animals as their horse to do the heavy work and for transportation. And there was a gentleman that was driving a cart full of rocks that was driven by an animal. And he felt uneasy about something, so he stopped the animal and got out and went back to look at the tailgate. While he was back there, there was something that alarmed the animal. The animal raised up and dumped the entire load of rocks on the man. Probably instant death. Mr. Rossin saw the event. He made this statement. There is nothing but God. The man jumped out from underneath the rocks like he just had a few foam balls on top of him or something. It came out like a rocket. Totally unaffected by the event. Instantaneous healing. Now, Mr. Rossin didn't just say the words. He had probably proved hundreds, if not thousands of times, that that's exactly the truth about God and about events, conflicts, accidents. He had the conviction well established in his consciousness that God was in control and there was absolutely nothing that could cause conflict or injury. Nothing. Nothing had the power. Wentworth Winslow said, imagine you're in a room, and this was about probably 75 or 100 years ago. He said, imagine you're in a room. No, it couldn't be 100 years ago. Well, yeah, there could have been, because it's about a telephone. Yes, they had telephones in the early 1900s. So he said, imagine there's a telephone that's ringing its head off, and there's a radio that is tuned in to station KOG, Kingdom of God, and is announcing only the facts about God and heaven. That's it. You didn't have any control over it. You could change the station, but that station, KOG, you didn't have any control over what they were saying. It was a unilateral statement or statements, continuous. Statements about God and man, the relationship, and those kinds of things. He said, that phone is going to be ringing all the time. But if you pick it up, you are opening yourself to being influenced erroneously by the devil, by the concept that there is evil. You're going to hear discord. You're going to hear lies about God's man. Why waste your time? He suggests it's much better don't pick up the phone at all. Whenever there's a suggestion of conflict, we have to address it. But it should be very quick, according to Mr. Rawson. Whatever the suggestion is, it's obviously going to be evil. Sin, sickness, death, disease, some friction of some kind. And he says, make a statement that that is not real, no matter what it is. Say something like this, he says, in one of his many books. There is no, and then whatever the claim seems to be. It can be anything, as long as it's not a God-derived activity, which means that it's perfect. Anything less than perfection, you can apply this. There is no, and then whatever it is. And then you explain the reason why. He gave us a book that here at the Institute we call the A to Z. It's really an encyclopedia of how to heal 1,315 problems. We have it on our website, which is mbeinstitute.org, and it's in alphabetic order, indexed. You can get to what you want in a couple of clicks. And if there are other problems related to that one problem, they are listed as well, suggesting you go and look at that particular alphabetical title and read about it. But he suggests not to read the whole chapter, which is called Applied Treatment. And the name of the book is Treatment or Healing by True Prayer. And the chapter on Applied Treatment, he suggests don't read it because it will implant in your thought all of these kinds of diseases and so forth, discords of all the different kind of natures that one could imagine. And beyond, he said, you don't want to embed that in your thought. If you have a problem, just look up that particular problem so that you will understand what the claim is, because he researched each one of these through prayer treatment on himself so that he could write the book. The idea came to him, but he wanted to make sure that it was a spiritual development, spiritual inspiration, direct from God. And he prayed along those lines for all of these 1,315 different ailments. So it's good for us to know the name of the problem, although we don't have to. Mary Baker Eddy says that treatment normally responds more effectively when we name the problem and deny that it is real. Now we got to remember that evil is very deceptive. So what we might think is the cause of our problem may not be it. We may need to raise our dimension, like one of the newscasters on the internet. He says, when he interviews someone that's supposed to be an expert in an area, he says, start with the 35,000 foot view. In other words, like an airplane, get up there where you can see a lot so that you don't miss anything that might be affecting what you're trying to take care of. Einstein says you cannot solve a problem on the same level of where the problem occurs. There was a professor that took a large white sheet with a little black dot in the middle of it, hung it across the viewing area of his college class, and he said, what do you see? They all saw the white sheet. Nobody saw the black dot. He said, look carefully. Finally, somebody saw the black dot and described it as being in the center, and then everyone looked more sincerely and saw it as well. And they said, you want us to focus on the black dot. He said, no. You need to know the black dot is there, and even if it's very tiny compared to the big picture, you need to solve it. You can't let any discord go unaddressed. You need to address every kind of discord to solve it. And then the big white sheet is totally in control, and you'll get to success. You will be able to yield the results that are successful. But you have to take care of the little black dot. We have a video, it's only like a minute long, and it says, how big is your problem? And since it's only a minute long, I will just encourage you to go to the website and look in the menu, and you'll see how big is your problem. And it shows you the heavenly bodies and the size, the relative size of all of them. And what we see from being an individual on Earth is not even a taste of the big picture. And the video shows you in very graphic form the different sizes, and it's something that's good to review. I would suggest you do it once a month. And then immediately when you have some kind of a problem, it will help you realize, okay, let me get up to a higher level and look at this. Am I really looking at the real source of the problem? Or is this only a decoy to try to keep me from seeing the real source, and so that I don't really end up fixing the problem? Maybe I only put a Band-Aid on it. Well, we need to fix the problem. We were talking earlier about how someone might think they need something that they ran out of. And one of the articles by Wentworth Winslow, in one of his four books, he published four books, and they're very unusual books because each one of them is filled with short articles of anywhere from a partial page to two or three pages. So he has, I believe it's 126 total articles divided into four books. And each book has the title of God in it and shows you the process we have to go through our thinking. For example, the first one is, let God do it. The second one is, God can do it. Book number three, God will do it. Book number four, God is doing it. We have to go through those steps in our own consciousness. There was a reference earlier in this recording about Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 26, about God made man in his image and likeness. But if you look at the text, you will find that the fact that God made man in his image and likeness is stated twice. The first time it says, let us make man in our image and likeness. And then it says, God made man in his image and likeness. There's a popular painting of Jesus standing at a door, knocking on the door. It appears that is to depict that the Christ consciousness is knocking on our door of consciousness to let in the God consciousness. Jesus was not very successful in his healing ministry around the area of Galilee, which is where he was supposedly born to Mary and attended school and learned and practiced the carpentry trade. All of that during the first 30 years of his life, in visible form on earth. They thought of him as either a boy or a youth or a carpenter. They blocked out of their thought the possibility that he could heal. What gave him any authority to be able to heal? As with many successful people who go through a difficult time, it's common to move to a new area. Some people even change their name so that they don't carry with them any stigma of reputation that they had from where they came from. I asked a practitioner, a very excellent long-time practitioner that I'd known for like 20 years. I said, "What do you think about an individual's name?" She said, "What's in a name?" She says, qualities, all is qualities. Our reputation should be based on the qualities we express. A lot of movie stars, they can't have any kind of a private life if they use their real name. So a lot of them use a different name. Of course, there's such an intense interest on finding out about people, so it doesn't always do the trick. Some people just want to be private. So they will use a pen name. She says, "What's in a name?" What you want to establish is your reputation for qualities. Don't be concerned about people. Be concerned about pleasing God. There are three quotes at the beginning of Science and Health as an introduction to the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. And the first quote says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." That's a quote from Jesus. The second one, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." That's from Shakespeare. Number three, "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. That is thy high behest. Thou here and everywhere." The first one is pretty obvious. The truth can't be something about matter. You shall know matter. We've got to be knowing spirit. We've got to be knowing the spiritual reality about whatever it is that we want to be free from, a false concept. Shakespeare gives us a clue on how we can build a good model to refer to. Our thinking makes it so. What do we want our experience to be? Do we want it to be an experience of progress, accomplishing harmonious conclusions? Do we want to be building a life of giving or taking? One is love, the other is hate. Hate of God, hate of our brethren. Hate of spirit, hate of truth, hate of divine mind, principle, love, soul, spirit. The third one, we have to do a little more digging. What do you think Mary Baker Eddy could mean when she says, "I'm glad you heard my prayer, dear Father, Mother, God, and I am blessed because you did"? Does God have any ears? How could God be omnipresent if he was physical? How could he be omnipresent if he was visible? Is it possible that she could be referring to what the definition of God that she gives us means when it says God is omnipresent? And remember the word omni, one, only, and all. God is the only entity that is omnipresent. There is no other. God couldn't be physical. A lot of people think Jesus is God. How could God be Jesus? In fact, Jesus himself said, when a Pharisee asked him a question, and he said, "Good master," and then he asked him the question, Jesus said, "Why call me good? There's only one good, and that is God." And of course, Mary Baker Eddy defined good, as stated previously in this recording, that good is defined as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. That means the only kind of action there can be is an action of goodness. There couldn't be an action that causes conflict. There cannot be an action that could even be conceived of being a conflict. Where does this leave war? The same place that it refers to in an article that is entitled, "Love Your Enemies." She said, "Who is thine enemy? Except one in our own thought that we create, that we label, that we fabricate, that we misstate and misunderstand to be an enemy." Did we forget all about Genesis chapter 1, about God made man in his image and likeness? Did we forget about the most important commandment according to Jesus? Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Well, it's basically the golden rule. If we did nothing more than live the golden rule, we would solve every problem that we ever had and prevent problems in the future. How could you have a conflict within yourself, which is really what sin, disease, sickness is all about? It's a conflict within. If we have total harmony within ourselves, we cannot have a problem. One of the wise people of the past said exactly that. If you have a sickness, then there's something within you that is friction. You've got a problem in something that you're holding inside that is not harmonious. This longtime practitioner friend that was referred to earlier, I asked her, I said, "How do you go about doing a treatment?" She said, "Well, when they call me," and, you know, for the last many decades, almost every practitioner works by telephone. She says, "When they call me, I let them go ahead and talk because I feel that they need to get it off of their chest." She said, "But as soon as we hang up the phone, I have to go to work on my own thought to get rid of almost every single thing that they told me. Otherwise, there's no way I can be a catalyst for bringing forth the healing." She said that may take up to 30 minutes before she can even start on working on the problem itself. Wentworth Winslow was contacted through a wire before they had international telephones. And the wire said, you know, it was a telegram through the old telegraph machines. Click, click, click. And the message was, 6 treatments, please. That didn't give them anything other than the word conflict to go on. He knew there was a problem of some kind, had no idea what it was or how long it had been going on or what the fellow's background was that could make him be subject to this or anything. The only way he could figure out how to work on it, because he didn't know how to contact the guy. He didn't even know for sure where he was, except he knew it came from South America. And he was residing in New York City, or suburb of New York. So the only thing he knew what to do, or how he could approach this, was to approach it on the basis of substance, which is flawless, which is purity. So he said he was extra conscious about everything that he was thinking, saying, and doing to make sure it was his absolute top level of purity. That was what he lived as his prayer for this particular individual. After the 6 treatments expired, he got another message that said, 6 more treatments, please. He continued to work the same way. Sometime after that, the fellow made contact with him, and they were able to communicate bilaterally. And so the fellow said, I want you to know that after the first 6 treatments, it was for a friend of mine, and after the first 6 treatments, he was healed. But I needed to have you do 6 more treatments because the people that were all around him couldn't believe that he was healed, and they didn't accept the healing, even though he was healed. So it took the second set of 6 treatments to heal the thought of everyone that was thinking of this gentleman with this problem. And the problem was insanity. He was apparently in an insane asylum, had no control over his thought, imagined various things. Maybeck Reddy says healing insanity is one of the easiest things to do. Because they already know, well, I suppose they do, I don't know. Maybe they're not conscious of it, but she says they already are manipulating human thought. So all you have to do is correct it from manipulating it in an imaginary way. But that's exactly what she states, that it's one of the easiest kinds of problems to heal. If everyone would study those definitions that were recited and do their best to live the golden rule, and live a life of giving, because that's the first requisite. We have to be constantly thinking of the benefit of other people in any contact we have with them, any contact whatsoever, in any form. Mary Beck Reddy thought it was so important that she did it every hour. And anyone that has read anything from the website about what she accomplished, and we stayed outright, she was attacked all the time, just like Jesus was. I mean, only 1 out of 12 disciples even came to his crucifixion, and no one came to his trial. If the 50 or so thousand people that he lectured to on those 2 hillsides, 4,000 and 5,000 plus women and children, 9,000. You got to calculate that there were probably 4 or 5 times that many people, if you counted the women and the children and the family. 9,000 just by four children would be 36,000, and you got another 9,000 with the wife, so that's 45,000 right there. Nobody showed up. Everybody was fearful. Same with Mary Baker Eddy. She started a movement that built up to millions, established in every country. The larger cities had, in America at least, had 40 or 50 churches. And what happened the day she passed? The day she passed, they took her picture out of the textbook, Science and Health. You can see it in the version we have on the website. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute knows that you better not try to separate the discovery and the discoverer, or you're in big trouble. You're stealing. You're stealing. If you try to separate the discovery and the discoverer, just like the church did. It used to be when there were testimonies, there was extensive appreciation given to Mary Baker Eddy. The last time I looked at one of the publications from the church, there was not even any mention of Mary Baker Eddy in hardly any of the texts anywhere, in any of the healings. They're grateful for Christian Science, or they're grateful for a particular phrase or paragraph or topic. But where's Mary Baker Eddy? And as a result, in the big cities where there used to be 40 or 50, there's only a few. And they're poorly attended. You can't separate the discovery and the discoverer, or you lose the whole effect of the discovery. We should be extremely grateful for all of these authors that gave us the example of how you can heal in 15 minutes and gave us all these beautiful books with their inspiration. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, Helen Wright, her finest book, in my humble opinion, is her last book she wrote, and she'd been on Earth for 100 years. Boy, she was sharp as a tack. I believe that that is her finest work. It's called Your Divinity Revealed. And she has 7 chapters in there that are exclusively devoted to understanding the 7 terms for God of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. 1 chapter on each one. It is the most educational book and organized very well with very good titles and subtitles. It's recommended that if you really want to be able to heal everything or anything, we have that as a button on our website, both up there in the header and down in the footer. Heal everything. We have a procedure, a very comprehensive procedure that we recommend you follow. And if you do it religiously with discipline and a systematic approach, you'll have effective results. Mary Baker Eddy on page 146 says she has reduced divine metaphysics to a system. And on page 330 she says there are 32 planks to the platform of divine metaphysics. And she says if you understand those planks, and of course you know what a platform is, you stand on it, so that's the beginning. And you build up from that valid, strong platform. And she has 10 pages following, which are pages 330 to 340, 11 pages, because both 330 and 340 are a part of the discussion on it. and she has 32 topics. And if you study those and understand them, of course, you need to study the whole book. In fact, we recommend as part of our procedure that you start at the beginning, which is right where the title pages are and those three quotes that were recited to you, that you study all the way to the end and you record everything that is in the original text. You contemplate it. What does it mean to you? And you record that. These are permanent recordings you should be making. If you do it on a cell phone, highly recommend that you transfer it to a permanent media. And you'll probably find that having a computer will be a great help, where you can have a larger screen than a cell phone. But each to their own. But you need to record it. Anyway, we have the whole procedure written down, and we know it's effective. We here in the Institute have relied on Christian Science our whole lives. I came from a family whose parents were also Christian Scientists, and of course, my parents were, of course, and so therefore, that's the only thing I ever knew about. I have three sisters, and we all went to a school that was a 12-year school. They'd never had a single student, we were told, that had perfect attendance at the school for all 12 years. Not only did each of us attend the school, but we all had perfect attendance our entire time at the school. The whole family, perfect attendance. And we were exempted from any class that had to do with teaching about the body. We were exempted because of our religious affiliation. If you ask me about the name of some kind of an illness, there's probably a 99% chance I wouldn't know. I remember I was with a friend when I was maybe 8 or 10, 12 years old. He lived a few doors down. We were living in the country. And when we were playing, there was a little accident, and he had a cut on his, I don't know, his finger or his hand or something. Maybe it was his arm. And so he said, I'm going to go and put some methylate on it, so I don't have any problem with germs. I didn't have any idea what he was talking about. No idea whatsoever. If I would have fallen down and cut myself and was bleeding or something, I would have just washed it off with soap and water and put a Band-Aid on it. Think nothing more about it. That's it. He was immediately, as only a young boy, he was worried about germs. That whole vocabulary, foreign to me. That's why Frederick L. Rawson, who wrote that book with 1,315 different statements about ailments and healing, about each one of them, that he does not recommend you read the whole chapter, but only if you're working on a problem, read that particular problem and the solution. Very, very insightful information that he gives. A great treasure. The writings of these people that went through these experiences. But our primary focus should be on the writings of Mary Baker Eddy. And the Bible, of course. Her writings are based on the Bible. The glossary is a very important chapter 17, which is filled with definitions, 144 definitions. And chapter 14, which is a summary of chapters 1 through 13. So we need to prepare our consciousness if we want to go up in our understanding of everything the spiritual understanding of everything. We have all the tools. Einstein said that religion without science is blind, and science without religion is lame. And he said, blessed art thou, referring to Mary Baker Eddy, because everything that is in this book, referring to the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And he made the statement that if you follow it systematically and scientifically, it will be effective. His life was devoted to understanding about the universe. He also made the statement, imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago. So he must have said that around 1946, because she discovered it in 1866. So that would have been 80 years. Imagine a woman. You see, women couldn't vote. They couldn't hold title to property. I don't know. They probably didn't have any such thing as a business license back in those days. But if they did, you probably couldn't get a business license. She wanted the truth to be individually demonstrated. And so in church services, instead of having a preacher, they had readers that were elected by the membership. Everyone had one vote. And each church had to have their own bylaws. They could not copy the bylaws of any other church, including the one in Boston that was in, you know, at the beginning. We have a golden opportunity. What are we going to do with it? Are we going to let the one and only divine mind control all actions so that we can prevent all conflict? Until you experience it, you will not realize how many problems you can eliminate. Our family didn't have any of the diseases that all the other families seemed to experience. We couldn't have had perfect attendance at school. We didn't have any of them. And I was a very aggressive young man. I was never accused of being average. I was probably thought to be from another planet. I raced cars, going 200 miles an hour. Raced motorcycles, same speed, 200 miles an hour. By coincidence, they both had the same top speed after I had them both, you know, fixed with racing engines. Just by coincidence, they both clocked exactly at 200 miles an hour. I rode horses fast. Everything I did was fast. Not a single accident did I have. Not one. I had a flat tire on a car when I was going 105 miles an hour. No problem. I don't want to think about what would have happened if I had it on the motorcycle. But anyway, we are protected. Now, I wasn't reckless. I mean, I wouldn't go, if I was out on a divided highway, I wouldn't go past someone else at a fast speed. I would only go those kind of speeds if I was by myself, no one around. Same on the motorcycle. I raced against myself. I didn't race in competition. If I did, then of course I'd be having my vehicle right next to everyone else going that speed. But I only did it as a personal interest, and shouldn't have done it on a public highway. That was breaking the law. Mary Baker Eddy says, Abide by the law. If you don't like the law, change it. Some of it was done in areas where there was no speed limit. I don't think they have any areas like that now. But when I was doing it, there was no speed limit on a number of places where I was. But we should always abide by the law. If we think the law is not right, she encourages us to get involved in changing it or eliminating it. So, do as I say, not as I do. Like Mother, most spiritual woman I ever met. And when I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, I would ask her if I could do something. She says, yes, go ahead and do it. And then before I would do it, sometimes she would change her mind. She says, no, I changed my mind, you can't do it. I said, why, Mother? She said, because I said so. Because I said so. That was her reason for changing her mind. She also said it's a woman's prerogative to change her, to change their mind. Okay, this is getting to be long. It's right now 1 hour and 15 minutes. Time flies. I don't even look at the clock until I'm done. And this is all extemporaneous, so it's not polished, as we never edit any of them. They are published, you know, as soon as possible after they're done by the people that operate or that do the programming on the website. So forgive any thing that needed to be refined, but that's the way we do it. I tried editing a couple of them a long time ago, several years ago, because I listened to it and I thought I'd like to change that a little bit. That's, I don't know, something incorrect. I don't know, I probably quoted something, because all the quotes are, well, most of them are extemporaneous. Some of them are recited directly out of the source. Depends on how many there are and what I give. But anyway, Mary Baker Eddy taught a metaphysical college, and her last class was in 1898, and in that class, she gave them 7 prayer treatments, which she recommended that we read and recite and think about often. That's what she uses. She says, declare this often. So I will read to you the one on mind, because that's what this is all about. Mind controls action and prevents all conflict. So I shall read to you The Diapason of Heaven by Mary Baker Eddy, with a focus on mind. She begins with a quote from Miscellaneous Writings, 206, line 19. The real Christian Scientist is constantly accentuating harmony in word and deed. Mentally and orally, perpetually repeating this diapason of heaven. Good is my God, and my God is good. Love is my God, and my God is love. We can declare often, divine mind is my mind, and my mind is God. God is my mind, and my mind is good. I have an intelligent mind, a good mind, a wise, perceptive, discerning mind, a clear mind, a joyous, happy mind. Mind is God, all acting, all wise, all-loving, all-knowing, all-seeing. Divine mind is enthroned in my consciousness. Mortal mind and matter and personal sense are not enthroned. Ignorance and apathy and materiality are not enthroned in my consciousness. Good is my mind, and my mind is good. Mind is my God, and my mind is good. Divine mind is enthroned. This is the Word of God. We have to change the subjective thinking we have of these seven names for personal sense to spiritual sense and see ourselves and others as spiritual individualities, not personalities. This way is the only way. It is the way the Bible characters walked with God and ascended. Amen. It is September the 25th at 1318. This has been an extemporaneous prayer treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute. The website is mbeinstitute.org. Thank you for listening. The end.